Hello there, I'm Jesse Camacho. This is number 0555, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0555. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet forensic anthropologist and best-selling author Kathy Rikes with her latest Temperance Brennan mystery called A Conspiracy of Bones. With 19 books out now, and of course a successful TV series, is it difficult to keep control of her character?
I listened to the feedback, and there's a separation between TV Tempe and book Tempe. So I didn't have complete control over TV Tempe, but I had a lot of input, and they did listen to my input on that. Book Tempe is all me. Often readers will come to my signings or my public events, and they'll say to me, you know, I didn't like it when you did this or this, and I'll have to tell them, no, that wasn't me. That was Tempe doing that.
Bart King is the author of Bad Dad Jokes.
A dad joke is an expression of love. It's done from a spirit of generosity, but essentially it's trolling your loved ones for a reaction. So a dad joke can't be a put-down or a cut-down. It's not an insulting form of humor. A lot of humor is based on making light of people and things. Dad jokes are a separate category, and I think because they're often pun-based or based on wordplay or kind of goofy things that don't have to do with making fun of a person, that they're sort of in a special category. So they're sort of those corny, adorable jokes.
Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge, or more importantly, from quarantine. Peter has never been a fan of New York Governor Andrew Cuomo or any of his family, but he is impressed with his current press conferences.
I just never liked the Cuomos at all. And when he held his first press conference, I turned to my wife and I said, who is that guy? Unbelievable. I mean, he's done a complete 360. He's absolutely being fantastic. He's doing a good job. And they're talking about running him for president. So it's an amazing turnaround. And now everybody's scratching their head and saying, was he just faking that other side of his, or is he faking this side? But it's like two different people. Another element of my science fiction movie.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news, and of course, an idiot of the day coming up. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0555, was actor Jesse Camacho, one of the stars of the Netflix series Lock and Key, which has just been renewed for a second season. Congratulations, Jesse, on the renewal and the work you're doing on the show. I've had the pleasure of seeing Jesse from when he was a kid on stage, and his work has always been impressive. Thank you very much, Jesse, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Yes, we are all locked up in our own little world, so let's look in on what we're calling the annals of isolation. In Melbourne, Australia, a bit of boredom in isolation led 27-year-old astrophysicist Daniel Reardon to experiment on March 26th with the idea to stop people from touching their faces. He came up with a necklace and accompanying bracelet of magnets that would sound an alarm whenever someone reached up. When that didn't work, Reardon started playing with the powerful neodymium magnets, clipping them to his earlobes and nostrils, and that's when things went wrong. Two magnets inside his nostrils became stuck together and he couldn't separate them. Reardon tried using pliers, but they became magnetized. Every time I brought the pliers close to my entire nose would shift toward the pliers, and then the pliers would stick to the magnet, he said. Finally, his partner took him to the hospital that she works at because, in his words, she wanted all of her colleagues to laugh at me. Doctors applied an anesthetic spray, then manually removed the magnets. Said Reardon, needless to say, I am not going to play with the magnets anymore. Yep, he may be an astrophysicist, but he's no rocket scientist. Regular listeners to the Stuff File will all know on this show how we love our truck spills, and this one seems like an April Fool's joke, especially since it happened on that very day. A tractor-trailer crash and subsequent fire near Dallas lay waste to an entire load of a hot commodity in these bizarre times: toilet paper. The Associated Press reported the driver was unharmed, but the TP burned extensively and spilled over the interstate, which had to be closed to traffic. The truck was hauling the large rolls typically used in business restrooms. Yes, tragic, really. I believe Herb Morrison said it best back in 1937.
All the humanity.
51-year-old Alberto Tito Alejandro was arrested following a high-speed chase after Washington State troopers received multiple calls on March 29th about a car hitting two other vehicles south of Seattle and then racing away at speeds of up to 100 miles per hour. Trooper Heather Axtman said that when officers got close to the 1996 Buick, they were shocked to see a dog sitting in the driver's seat. Alejandro was steering and pushing the gas pedal from the passenger seat. When we took him into custody, Axman said, he admitted to our troopers that he was teaching his dog to drive. Alejandro was charged on multiple counts, including driving under the influence of drugs. Well, at least he was social distancing himself from humans. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, MedFet UK, a small company that supplies people who indulge in medical fetishes, donated its entire inventory, just a few sets, of disposable medical scrubs to Britain's National Health Service on March 27th after being contacted by desperate procurement officers. When we, a tiny company set up to serve a small section of the kink community, find ourselves being sought out as a last resort supplier to our National Health Service in a time of crisis, something is seriously wrong, the company posted on Twitter. It also took the opportunity to provide a PSA: whenever getting ready for some kinky fun or guarding against a virus outbreak, the single most effective method of infection control is scrupulous hand hygiene. Wow. I'm just curious to know, who was the desperate procurement officer at the NHS who knew to call this kinky company in the first place? Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Forensic anthropologist and best-selling author Kathy Reichs is back with a new Temperance Brennan mystery. This one is called A Conspiracy of Bones. Kathy joins us on the line right now from Charlotte, North Carolina. Hi, Kathy.
Hey, Peter.
Thanks very much for being on the program with us. If I'm not mistaken, this is like the 20th mystery that you've written, Temperance Brennan mystery?
Well, it's number 19.
Number 19.
Temperance Brennan.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I did 6 young adult books. Okay. For young adults, middle school to high school level.
So with 19 novels out with the same character, what is the biggest thing or the one thing that you now know about Temperance Brennan, even though it comes from your own mind, that you didn't know when you first started writing her?
Oh, sometimes she lets her heart take over her head. And her head's not in good shape in this book. So, yeah, she's pretty dedicated. She's pretty feisty. She's got a great sense of humor. We've gotten to know each other over the years. In two manifestations, the television Tempe and the book Tempe.
Well, I was going to bring up the television and in a minute, and the one thing I wanted to ask, again, similar to the first question, and that is, even though this is from your own head, it's your own idea to create this character, have you had to let her go a little bit because with the television show, other people get involved with the decision-making process? And even with your readers over the years, I'm sure, take a little bit of ownership of the character, and I'm sure you hear responses from them as to what you're doing with the character. Are you affected by how the response is to Temperance over the years?
Well, I listen. I listen to the feedback. And as I said, there's a separation between TV Tempe and Book Tempe. So I didn't have complete control over TV Tempe, but I had a lot of input, and they did listen to my input on that. Book Tempe is all me. Often, as you say, readers will come to my signings or my public events, and they'll say to me, you know, I didn't like it when you did this or this, and I'll have to tell them, no, that wasn't me. That was Tempe doing that. So I do get feedback, I do both positive and not very often, but occasionally negative, and I do listen to it. But when I sit down to write the character, it's really, I'm the one at the keyboard.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, again, you say 19 books, but isn't this the longest stretch you've had between books?
Yes, but certainly between Temperance Brennan books.
Yes.
In between, I released a standalone book, and I also released a collection of short stories called The Bone Collection. So I wasn't completely idle during that time.
Was it by design that you were staying away from Temperance for that period of time, or is it something that just happened?
It's more something that just happened. My publisher had proposed doing a standalone, and then I had written three electronic short stories. They're not so short. I have trouble with short. They're more like novellas. So my publisher suggested, well, why don't you write a fourth one, and then we'll bind them together into an anthology of short stories. So it just kind of happened.
So tell us what A Conspiracy of Bones is all about.
You know, I just read this article that any author ought to be able to do what we would call in Hollywood the elevator pitch, where you can summarize your book in a very few bullet points. So if I were going to use bullet points, I'd say they are a brain lesion, a faceless corpse, exile, a conspiracy theorist, and exploitation of the vulnerable. That clears it all up, right?
Well, you had me at faceless corpse.
Well, the story opens, somebody sends Tempe a text message with images of a faceless, he has no face, he has no hands, so he can't be ID'd visually or by fingerprints or by dental records. But she doesn't know who these images come to her from. And she's in a bit of a bad situation at work because there's a new boss at the medical examiner office in Charlotte, and this new boss really detests Tempe and will not, she's exiled her. She will never call her for a consult. So Tempe hears the new ME making statements about this faceless corpse, and she knows she's making mistakes. So she becomes committed to finding an identity for this man. This faceless corpse is kind of a symbol to her of all the faceless dead out there that she's worked all her career trying to help identify. So she gets committed to finding out who this person is, but she's having to work in this book outside the system. She's having to kind of go rogue and rely on her own resources and her own network of colleagues.
You know, mystery writers get to take what's happening or out of their imagination, out of their own world, and expound upon that. And I'm just wondering, in these dangerous times, pandemic-wise, that we're now living in, does it make your mind wander when you see what's happening in the world right now and you're thinking, wow, you know, there's somebody out there who could be taking advantage of this situation and creating a crime, and maybe that's the next story I'm going to write. Does your mind work that way?
Actually, the theme of this book is what there's so much information out there, either online or, you know, on TV shows, radio shows, online, podcasts, whatever. And anybody can basically put out any disinformation or misinformation that they want to. So how does the average person, the average reader or viewer or listener, sort through all of that and determine what is real and what is not real? And that's kind of the theme of the book.
With 19 books out now, is it almost second nature? Is it easy for you to come up with new storylines, new ideas, because you know the character so well, she has the same job that you've had for years. Is it second nature, or have you ever had writer's block?
Well, I don't believe in writer's block. I know that will annoy some of my fellow writers, but, you know, every day you, or whatever block of time you have free that you can write, you need to sit down and write. And you can't allow yourself the luxury of saying, well, today is not a good day, the muses are not with me, or whatever. So I write whenever I have time available. So that's just second nature to me.
And in the writing process, what gets you the most excited? Like, because again, you still work, you still teach, so you're in the real world. Do you have situations where you say, oh, I can't wait to get home and add this to a next story or whatever?
Well, there is that. Sometimes I'll see something in the news, some little tidbit about, you know, strange zombie ants down in the Brazilian jungle or something, which I did use in this book. Yeah, and then I want to incorporate that into the story. Or I actually keep a file of future stories, and I put little tidbits. I might actually, you know, cut them out of the newspaper or jot down some notes on something I heard on a radio report. Or so I'm always, at the end of this book, there's something called From the Forensic Files of Kathy Reichs, and I've always put this at the end of each story to tell people where my ideas come from. And I compare myself to an ant with the feelers always out. The feelers are always out there looking for new material for the next Temperance Brennan book.
When you sit down to write, like this latest novel, A Conspiracy of Bones, do you know in your writing process the beginning, middle, and end of a particular story, or are you learning the story as you write it?
Both. We call in the writing business, we refer to planners and pantsers. Planners are people that plan the whole book out, perhaps outline every single chapter. Pantsers are people that go by the seat of their pants. So I'm kind of a hybrid. I do outline the first 6 to 10 chapters, and I know what's going to happen. I know what the ending will be, but then I just go by the seat of my pants. I just write. But as I'm writing, it's always a feedback loop. I'm constantly getting new ideas as I'm writing. And then sometimes I have to go back and change things to incorporate those. And those are the, getting back to your other question, those are the exciting moments when I go, you know, wow, this is a new idea. I hadn't thought of this, but this is going into the story.
At this time period, as we are recording this, we are still locked down in a quarantine and people are sometimes getting a cabin fever. Is this a situation that's good or bad for you, and how are you dealing with it?
Actually, that's the one upside for a writer, is that you are stuck at home, so you have a lot more time to write. You have a lot fewer distractions, I suppose. So that's the one benefit I'm getting out of self-isolation.
You've also written with your son, right?
I have. I have. Brendan Reichs and I wrote the Viral series, which is about Temperance Brennan's 14-year-old great-niece and her friends. And they use forensic science on kind of a middle school to high school level to solve cold cases. But there's also, the series is called Virals because a virus also gives them some very special abilities, as we learn in the first book. So it's very timely right now. And if kids are stuck at home and looking for something good to read, the Viral series is perfect, a somewhat more benevolent virus than coronavirus.
We are all creatures that continue to learn. The reason why I brought up your son is the fact that you did a situation where you were collaborating with someone else. How was that experience for you to collaborate with another writer? And does it affect or change the way you write when you're on your own after that experience?
Well, it was the first time I had written with a partner, and he's an attorney, he's a litigator. So when we would have differences of opinion, it could make for some very interesting editorial meetings, as we used to call them. But one of the things about, I also wrote screenplays for the show, episodes of Bones, and one of the things that I found really stimulating about that is you do that by something called you break the story, and that means when you break the story, you go into the writer's room, and it's collaborative. Another 5 or 6 or 7 of the writers, staff writers will be in there, and you're just throwing out ideas. You're just brainstorming to get an outline of that particular episode. And that was, I really enjoyed that. That was really stimulating for me.
Well, the new book is called A Conspiracy of Bones. It's just out. It's the latest Temperance Brennan's mystery. Kathy, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Author Kathy Reichs. Her new book, again, is called A Conspiracy of Bones. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0555, and you'll find links to Kathy's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like, but the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. Coming to you from Canada, the land of universal healthcare, colorful money, and the correct spelling of the word theater. This is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we will talk to the author of Bad Dad Jokes. Plus, Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, will share a slice of the Big Apple. He's somewhere locked in his home in New York. We also have an Idiot of the Day coming your way and much more Stuff File news here on The Stuff File program, which is heard everywhere, including on Stitcher and TuneIn, and can also be heard via Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Just click on the Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify buttons located on the website at thestufffile.com. And whichever platform you listen to the program on, please feel free to leave a review of the show on their site. It would be greatly appreciated. Well, a British comedy club said about 20 police officers responded to the facility to shut down a live show that actually took place more than 2 weeks earlier. The owners of the Hot Water Comedy Club in Liverpool, England, said a Facebook Live show featuring comedian Paul Smith hosting a selection of clips from when the club was still open led a concerned viewer to contact police and report the club was violating bans for large gatherings amid the coronavirus pandemic. Said Paul Blair, one of the club's owners, "I was really surprised. The first we heard about it was when we got a call from the convenience store next door saying a full police squad had turned up at the club. I looked on our CCTV and saw about 20 police officers outside. The club shared CCTV footage showing the confused officers gathered outside the empty club." Blair went on to say, "I think it was a waste of their time, but I don't think whoever called them in did it deliberately. I think it was just a misunderstanding." Yep. We're not here all week, folks. Don't tip your waitresses. Actually, still tip your waitresses. Anyway, an Argentinian children's entertainer was allegedly so desperate to see his girlfriend during the world's shutdown that he donned a purple Barney the Dinosaur costume and set off looking for love.
I love you. You love me.
Cops in Buenos Aires were not amused by the 52-year-old man's gambit. Officers busted the bogus Barney as he streaked through the city on his motorcycle. He allegedly told officers he was on his way to work at a child's birthday party, but later changed his tale and admitted he was on his way to a tryst. Residents in Argentina's capital have been confined to their homes for nearly 2 weeks and can only leave for trips to buy food or medicine. The suspect was charged for operating a vehicle without registration documents and disobeying Argentina's strict stay-at-home COVID-19 order. Well, guess he couldn't hug or sing his way out of this one.
With a great big hug and a kiss from me to you, won't you say you love me too?
No. An Idaho man broke a Guinness World Record that he said was perfect for social distancing. Most catches in 30 seconds with a fire sword. David Rush, who has broken more than 100 Guinness World Records to promote STEM education, took to the middle of the cul-de-sac across his street and flipped a flaming sword 57 times in 30 seconds, beating the previous record of 28. Rush said his neighbors came out of their houses to watch while maintaining a safe distance, both due to coronavirus social distancing protocols and the fact that he was throwing a flaming sword into the air. The record-breaking enthusiast broke the record for most fire sword catches in 1 minute in summer of 2019, but his previous attempt for the 30-second version of the record was disqualified by Guinness for unknown reasons. Boy, I wish I could toss and catch a flaming sword. That would make answering the door for religious groups much more interesting. Yeah. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a man was arrested in Tennessee after he allegedly went into a gas station convenience store, punched a woman, and threw meat at the cashier, all while naked. Jalen Clay entered a Rocky Top Market in Powell, Tennessee. He allegedly took a bottle of water and left without paying. A witness reportedly told police the man came back into the store and started to knock stuff off the shelves. Clay is accused of punching a woman in the head and throwing sausages at the person at the cash. Clay was stunned by police several times before being taken into custody. He faces multiple assault charges. I bet everybody else who witnessed this bizarre crime were also stunned. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Bart King is back on the show. He's written several books, including The Big Book of Girl Stuff, The Big Book of Spy Stuff, The Big Book of Gross Stuff, The Big Book of Superheroes, and more recently, The Drake Equation. He's back with his latest book, which is called Bad Dad Jokes, That's How I Roll, and I is spelled E-Y-E. Bart joins us via Skype from Portland, Oregon. Hi, Bart.
Hey, Peter.
Nice to have you back on the program. By the way, just as coincidence would have it, 2 weeks in a row, we've had someone on the show from Portland, Oregon.
Yeah. Well, that's just a testament to your good taste.
Yeah. Well, last week, we had Sean Bolden, who was the owner of the Lucky Devil Lounge. Yeah, he's sending his strippers out to deliver food with a company called...
I'm laughing because I should have said, yes, I'm familiar with his story.
Boober Eats.
Not personally, Peter. This is, you know, this is a family... And by the way, just I hate to interrupt. It's Bad Dad Jokes, That's How I Roll. It's a bit of a confusing title, but in case someone looks for dad jokes, they might be hard-pressed. So the strippers go out and they deliver food, as I understand it, from the Lucky Devil Lounge.
Yes. And they're in pasties and they're out doing their thing. And one of the first things I asked Sean was, what's the current temperature in Portland?
Yeah, it's temperate, shall we say. And it's no longer, I think it was called Boober originally, but I think Uber took action and now it is no longer referred to as such.
Ooh.
Maybe that came up before. I don't know. But anyway, it's not. He has a new catchy name for it.
Okay. Well, let's get to your book, Dad Jokes, That's How I Roll. I've listed several of the books that you've written before.
Yes.
What brought you to this one?
I have 8 siblings, and we have a large family, and my father was and is an inveterate joker, but not like a practical joker. He's what we would think of now as a dad joker. And so he would, you know, I guess I should define dad jokes. So a dad joke is an expression of love. It's done from a spirit of generosity, but essentially it's trolling your loved ones for a reaction. Again, this is not done in a mean-spirited way. It's done with a spirit of love and generosity. So a dad joke can't be a put-down or a cut-down. It's not an insulting form of humor. And in fact, a lot of stand-up comedians, I think, would agree with me when they say that a lot of humor is based on making light of, you know, people and things. Dad jokes are a separate category. And I think because they're often pun-based or based on wordplay, or kind of goofy things that don't have to do with making fun of a person, that they're sort of in a special category. So there's sort of those corny, adorable jokes, right, that we love and loathe at the same time. And a lot of it has to do with how we feel about the person who's telling the joke. Anyway, my dad was that kind of a dad joker, right? So he had this generous spirit, but he was also trolling us and driving us crazy. So, of course, we were eye-rolling like, you know, dutiful children. And so that was, I mean, you know, it's not a brilliant jump from there to think, well, what kind of a dad joke book could I put together? And I didn't want it to be, I don't want to forestall, by the way, your questions, but I didn't want it to be just a joke book, right? There's anyone can write a joke book, even if it's a good one. So I wanted to kind of explore this idea of dad humor, like, why do we do it? Where does it come from? Can it be changed a little bit so that dads aren't just telling the same material that they were using when their kids were in kindergarten, when their kids are in middle school or high school or adults? So that kind of thing. I beg your pardon, but feel free.
Well, no, I wanted to ask, I mean, since you're one of eight kids and your dad is, as you say, an inveterate joke, a dad joke teller, is it genetic? Are you worried?
If only we could expunge this little, you know, spiral from our DNA, you know, the human race would be much better off. That's, you know, it's a good question. So in, among my siblings, then, I, based on my anecdotal evidence, I would say there is a genetic component. Either that, it's the, right, it's the nature versus nurture thing with comedy. And so whether it's nurture or nature, it's hard to say. I'm going to err on the side of nurture here. I think we just grew up in an environment that was permeated with dad jokey, you know, there was oxygen, of course, and then there was dad jokey elements in the atmosphere. So it affected us all deeply and irrevocably.
Okay, so we've agreed that it's genetic or could be genetic. Could it be contagious?
Well, I can only hope that my book, and it's the word contagion I'm using advisedly in our current climate, but I'm hoping my book can maybe spread the contagion a little bit. Absolutely. Like the idea that anyone could turn to a dad joke. And I don't, again, just mean reading, you know, reading jokes out of a book, but I mean sort of working on your own creativity and the way that one looks at the world and trying to kind of spin things around in a slightly different way, oftentimes with puns or wordplay-based humor. Yeah, I think it's absolutely a contagion, a welcome contagion in these times. I don't know what the vaccine would be for it, probably an IQ over, let's say, 110, but yeah.
I understand that you have a dad joke scoring chart, and this is a bit frightening to me because I have this mental image of getting a low score from the Eastern European judges.
Right. Well, yeah, that brings to mind the one of my favorite jokes, which is where would we be without humor? The answer is Germany, or pick your own Eastern European country if you prefer, Slovakia. You know. So the dad joke scoring chart is the idea is that you get a higher score the better the dad joke reaction is. Now, with normal humor, of course, the joke reaction that you want is simply laughter, but dad jokes are a slightly more specialized form. So in the taxonomy of humor, the scoring has to be a little bit different. So for example, if you were to tell a joke like the joke that I just did, let's say, which isn't actually a very good dad joke because it sort of makes fun of, in my case, Germany. But you would say the joke, and then if you had an audience who then responded with loud groans, disgusted exclamations of dad, geez, that kind of thing, then you would get a score of 8 on a total of, on a scale from 1 to 10. You would also then add 2 bonus points if you were not the person's dad. So if they protested and called you dad, you know, that would be a perfect score of 10. So you actually want to, I guess where I'm going with this is the more outraged cries of betrayal that you can come up with, the better off you are, which is typically not something that a person who's telling stand-up, for example, would be aiming for. Of course, uncontrollable or legitimate laughter is good, but, you know, well, maybe you have some more questions about this. I don't know.
Well, I'm just curious. The mere fact that we call it a dad joke, does that imply that it's a lesser form of comedy or joke telling than mom is capable of, or heaven forbid the worst?
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, please.
Or heaven forbid, even worse than that mom can't tell a joke.
Right. So I should have led with this, I'm realizing, which is page one of the book, where there's a kind of an FAQ section, and FAQ page one, aren't moms delivering fresh chuckles on a daily basis? And the answer, of course, is absolutely. It's unfair that these are called dad jokes. But my argument is that, like mom jeans, dad jokes are not gender normative. So anybody, regardless of their gender identity or age, or whether they're child-free or child-encumbered, wait, did I say that right, can tell dad jokes. You, in other words, you don't certainly don't have to be a dad to tell a dad joke. In fact, probably the most felonious dad jokers I know are not male. And I mentioned here that the dad joke doesn't even rank that high in the hierarchy of family humor. It is outranked by the grandma bon mot, the cousin quip, the uncle wisecrack, and the mother-in-law one-liner. Those all outrank the dad joke. So in answer to your question, one could argue that the dad joke actually rates fairly low in the family hierarchy of humor. And whether that applies, then how that applies to the overall humor taxonomy, well, that's maybe a longer answer.
I just want to let it be known for the record that my parents went to their grave having never told a joke. Either one of them. Never told a joke.
I just have such a hard time believing that. I mean, I do believe it, but
parents,
you are possessed with wit, timing, a keen comedic sense. So where did your ability come from?
Maybe the mailman. I have no idea.
Sure. We're going to chalk it up to DNA, not nature versus nurture. I think nature just took that round.
Yeah, my parents had absolutely no sense of humor whatsoever.
Oh, that's fascinating. So as your sense of, well, I don't want to turn the interview around on you, but I'd love to maybe after we're done. Like, how did they respond to your nascent attempts at joking? I'm assuming you got a humor in your childhood.
Yeah, not very well, and even less when I started working on the radio.
Of course, because it'd be horribly embarrassing for them.
Oh, yeah, which is one of the reasons I enjoyed my career so much.
Well, if my parents hear this, or should I say when they do, they will be mortified, even though they have a sense of humor. So, but maybe their mortification will be more well justified.
Okay, I'm going to put you on the spot before I let you go, and that is, what is your favorite dad joke, if there is one?
Oh, okay, that's a good question. I don't have a favorite, Peter, but I did, when I was glancing through the book before we started speaking, I did see one that made me smile anew, and it was in the section of the book about how one should seek to be a little more creative. So, for example, all of us who are in quarantine are thinking a little bit more about food preparation and the kitchen, I think, than we normally do. And so we, for example, we were baking bread the other day. And so, of course, what comes to mind are jokes about, I wanted to make more, but I couldn't raise the dough, that kind of thing. But those sort of jokes are sort of a dime a dozen or a dime a baker's dozen. And so something that's a little more sophisticated was this particular pun, which I enjoy. It's about an Indian restaurant, which sadly only does takeout right now in our neighborhood. My favorite Indian restaurant's location is a closely guarded secret. Before I was allowed to eat there, I had to sign a non-disclosure agreement. Non spelled N-A-A-N. See, and now I'm doing, thank you for this opportunity, by the way, to tell my favorite dad joke, because it is a pun or language based, and also what I've done is quickly explain why it's funny. And nothing makes a dad joke more dad jokey than explaining to a person after you finish it, now this is funny because, you know what I mean, dot, 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 and then just insert whatever the explanation is. It's just dad joke comedy gold. Now, keep in mind, in the real world of comedy, this is, antimatter and to be avoided at all costs. But thank you for that opportunity, I guess, is what I'm saying, Peter.
The book is Dad Jokes, That's How I Roll.
Bad dad jokes. Bad dad jokes.
And it's available, bad dad jokes, That's How I Roll. And it's available right now for pre-order from Amazon.com and Amazon.ca. Bart, I thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Peter, always a pleasure. I so appreciate it. Thank you.
And I know one of the things that's most difficult is to be, in this difficult time, to be quarantined with someone who tells dad jokes.
Well, since you mentioned it, I was going to maybe just give people a caveat that, in close quarters, dad jokes should be dispensed very conservatively. You don't want to drive someone for, like, a good response to a dad joke is a credible threat of violence. A bad response would be an actual violent act. So you don't want to cross that threshold. So use your dad jokes judiciously.
In that case, for more than one reason, I will say to you, stay safe, Bart.
Thank you very much, Peter. You as well.
Bart King, author of Bad Dad Jokes, That's How I Roll. Again, you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0555, and you'll find links to Bart's website, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can pre-order his book right now directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
Got something for the mailbag? Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. Send your email to mailbag@thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's mailbag@thestufffile.com. Or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Often I mention my book, Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. I also often mention that I'd like you to become a patron of the Stuff File program via Patreon.com. Well, this is my opportunity to combine both of those pleas to you. You've heard me say on many occasions about the myriad of celebrities I've had the chance to talk to that are contained in my book, which is published by Bear Manor Media. You've also heard me mention that some of the celebrities in my book, and many others, can be heard on our page at Patreon.com. Well, if you've been on the fence about joining Patreon, let me try to pull you over to our side. By becoming a patron, you help to make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And if you do become a regular patron, as a Patreon reward, I'll share with you an electronic version of my book for your e-reader. So join Patreon and claim your copy of Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. Sign up today at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, the Stuff File presents the Gabby Cabby, direct from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge in the city that never sleeps, New York. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And out of his cab, but somewhere in quarantine, is Peter Franklin. Hello, sir.
Good morning, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Live from the streets of New York. That's all a bunch of baloney. There's no live from the streets of New York. We are a ghost town. I am living in a science fiction movie. The streets are deserted. I can't believe what's going on.
Well, how are the Franklins surviving in the home life? And where are your kids? Because I know your kids are adults, but where are they?
Well, our three kids are involved with the U.S. Army. One is in the United States Army, and he, of course, is on active duty all the time. The other one is a member of the Maryland National Guard, and he's on active duty all the time. The reason I'm making that distinction is because it's not as if they've been called up. And my daughter teaches American history at the Texas Tech University in Texas, and she's retired from the military. So we're certainly watching everything that goes on in terms of the Army, and it's amazing to watch the efficiency that the Army is bringing to this mess.
Are you going stir crazy at all at home, or are you doing just fine?
No, I'm not going stir crazy, because I was very lucky over 47 years ago when I picked somebody to get married to, and I got married to my best friend, and thank goodness she's returned to be my best friend forever and ever and ever. But, you know, it's interesting that you raise that question, because one of the distressing things about this whole thing is domestic violence has gone way up in New York City. And they're attributing that to just that, people being quarantined into their houses, getting on each other's nerve, and then starting to slap each other around. So that's definitely one more downside that we have to contend with. But I wouldn't dare hit my wife, because she'd beat me up.
Now, I know you have said in the past, you've had some thoughts on several of the politicians that hail in your neck of the woods. But I got to tell you, I've been watching Andrew Cuomo's daily press conferences. How do you think he's doing?
I don't know who that person is, okay? Because Cuomo was a guy, I didn't like him. I don't like his brother who works for CNN. I don't like the family. I just never liked the Cuomos at all. And when he held his first press conference, I turned to my wife and I said, who is that guy? Unbelievable. I mean, he's done a complete 360. He's absolutely being fantastic. He's doing a good job. And they're talking about running him for president. So it's an amazing turnaround. And now everybody's scratching their head and saying, was he just faking that other side of his, or is he faking this side? But it's like two different people. Another element of my science fiction movie.
Well, for the record, he has stated unequivocally on several occasions, very bluntly, no, 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 no. He has no desire to be the president of the United States.
Because this time around, it would be silly for him to do it, but he's opened the way for the next time. He's still a comparatively young person. So I'd like to announce at this time that I also am not running for president at this time.
Okay. Now, how do you feel about your mayor, Bill de Blasio?
Hey, the job is too much for him. Everybody picks on him. Everybody makes fun of him. It's the same thing like with Joe Biden. They're to me, because I guess deep down inside I'm a sweet guy, I'm sympathetic to Biden and I'm sympathetic to de Blasio because it's just too much. They can't handle it. So they're not bad guys. They're not crooked guys. They're not evil guys. They're dopes who are getting hustled into what they're doing. So just like Biden is controlled from behind the scenes by his gang, de Blasio is also. What Biden and de Blasio actually need is for me to be their advisor. I'd straighten them out and give them a chance.
Now, at press time, there are more than 400 cops who have tested positive for the coronavirus, and also many members of the fire department as well. How big is this becoming a problem?
It's a very big problem, because right before we got into this mess, we had the mess where they decided, the legislative people up in Albany and in New York City, to release people from jails because they felt we had too many people in jails. And a lot of people were very much against that. So if you add the releasing the criminals, they were convicted, from jail, the lowering of the amount of cops that we have, I wouldn't say that it's dangerous to even walk on the streets in New York, but even if you were to go out to walk your dog at night, you better be very careful. There's just too many criminals around and not enough cops.
And the criminals aren't staying 6 feet away from people.
No, they aren't. But for that matter, a lot of people aren't. And we got a lot of trouble. On my own personal opinion, that what's destroyed or contributed to destroying the United States is that vacation thing that all those kids from college did in Florida. That was absolutely insane, to get thousands of kids from all over the country to go to the beaches of Fort Lauderdale, et cetera, and then just work their way home, where they quite definitely killed their grandparents.
Now, I know, again, with so many millions of people in New York City, yes, New York is basically a ghost town right now, but it's all relative. If you look out your window right now, do you see anybody?
I mean, in a sense, no, not really. I mean, of course, there's one person, and there's another person, and there's a cop, and an ambulance went by. But no, there's nobody on the streets. And as a matter of fact, one of the interesting aspects of this also is New York is a very noisy place. And yet here we have a period of time where it's very quiet. And instead of hearing the general hum of the city, you hear individual noises like the wail of a siren. And boy, do we hear sirens. So you can almost isolate each noise you're hearing. A truck idling, a bus idling, somebody beeping a horn. It's not that hover and all-encompassing din. As I say, it's an individual noise that you hear. It's really weird.
As a taxi driver, how soon, when this whole thing started, did you stay away from your cab? Did you work until the last minute when the city was shut down, or did you pull back a little bit even before that?
No, what I did is I pulled back, I stopped driving the cab, and I also canceled all the people who had booked tours, and I gave them the advice of not coming to New York. And since my tours, I remember them well, people pay me in advance, the problem that I had, and I'm kind of working my way out of, is I'm giving the money back to everybody who booked a tour with me. So that's a financial disaster, but there's nothing I can do about it, and I have it pretty good. I'm in my own good health so far. My wife is. We have a nice home. We have food, so medical care, so we're okay. I can't complain. But financially, it just absolutely destroyed us completely. And that is the big problem, because even though you know and your nice listeners probably know this is the month everybody in the United States is going to get a check, that's just like putting a Band-Aid on a wound. That's not going to solve the problem. It's not enough money. It's not going to be distributed properly, and it may buy some time. The only good aspect of all of this that comes out of this is everybody hates their landlord. I know I'm saying that as a joke. There are some very nice landlords. But during this period of time, you can actually go over to your landlord and say, I'm not paying the rent. What are you going to do about it? And the landlord can't do anything about it because there's no more evictions. The landlords are really screwed because they don't have any money. The tenants are only going to get further in arrears. But as I say, for the moment, no rent in April.
What was the moment, when the city shut down, what was the moment for you when you said, oh, gosh, this is really serious? Like, for instance, was it when, Broadway shut down completely, or what was it for you that did it?
What did it for me is when I found out where it came from, because maybe I've seen too many James Bond movies. Not only do I lay this at the fault and the feet of the Chinese, and I don't mean the Chinese people, I'm talking the country, I think it's intentional. It's straight out of a James Bond movie. I know that sounds like a conspiracy and everything, but they did it intentionally, and boy, has it worked well. The minute I sensed that, I figured it's time for me at least to toss in the towel.
You really believe that the Chinese are behind this intentionally?
Okay, remember, Peter, what we're talking about here. When we say Chinese, we're not talking about Chinese people.
You're talking about the government.
I'm not walking around on the street beating up Chinese restaurant owners. But I absolutely positively believe, okay, based on my years of experience of being a streetwise people, of knowing people, that's what I attribute it to. I think they did it intentionally.
Or at least accidentally?
No, I won't even give them that. They did it intentionally.
Okay. We'll be sending a copy of this tape directly to Beijing.
I did already in a blog.
Okay, fair enough. One of the things...
And Mike, I might make... Since you raised that point and the tape is rolling, so to speak, I'd like to point out that Peter Anthony Holder has absolutely nothing to do with what I just said. I'm a guest on his show. And that's the way I feel, but you can't hold him responsible. So if you want to get upset with somebody, Mr. Chinese Prime Minister, write to me, but leave Peter alone.
So does that mean that in the future, when all is said and done and business gets back to usual, you're not going to take any money from the Chinese government for tours of New York City? Because I'm sure they'd love to take a tour in your taxi.
Yeah, well, that's one of those great questions they always ask. Well, what would it be if your family was robbed? What would you do if your daughter was sexually attacked or something? What would you do? Now, it's a nice question. I have absolutely nothing against Chinese people. As a matter of fact, my wife happens to be an Asian. So the fact of the matter is I'm not upset with Chinese people, and that's why I'm going out of my way to distinct. The people who run China, and you're going to get me going here into a tirade, are a bunch of bums, and that's all that they are.
Okay, then. On that note, let's talk about your wife, because she does some amazing stuff in the kitchen, and I guess she's busy these days.
Well, you see, that's the deal. Since there's no more eating out in New York City, and there's now no more even really takeout or delivery or anything like that, everybody has suddenly started to cook in their own apartments and their own homes. Now, for many years, my wife has been gluten intolerant, and she doesn't get along with lactose, the milk thing. So she's had a website, which is called Mrs. Gabby's Kitchen. That's all you have to put into the browser. You don't have to put in the www or the HTTP, just Mrs. Gabby's Kitchen. And it's menus and cooking with gluten-free and the lactose thing. But that also can be adjusted. You can cook it either way, so to speak. And, of course, she's getting a tremendous number of hits. She's not selling anything, but it's just another example of how times have changed. So I would invite any of your nice listeners, and we're not selling anything, go to Mrs. Gabby's Kitchen and start cooking. It's almost as good as sex.
Mrs. Gabby's Kitchen is the website. Also, your website is gabby.com. Peter, thank you very much for being on the program with us once again. Stay safe, my friend.
Thank you.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about a racetrack for this edition of The Stuff File program. We do have an idiot of the day coming your way in just a matter of moments. Here on a show that is also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio, and of course, also on Spotify. Check it out on those two platforms if you haven't done so already. But I just want to take a brief moment to briefly mention that, as listeners know, we have this program each week to share a few laughs and have a little fun, and God knows we can use a laugh or two right about now. And while we share a laugh or two, even at the expense of those who don't follow the rules during this time of social distancing, it's imperative to know that COVID-19 itself is no laughing matter. Get yourself and keep yourself informed. Don't blindly follow every post, every well-meaning friend, and especially all the low-life scammers out there who will steer you in the wrong directions. Stay informed by going to official government websites. Now, here in Canada, it's canada.ca/coronavirus. That's canada.ca/coronavirus. If you're in the United States, it's cdc.gov/COVID-19. That's cdc.gov/COVID-19. Those who listen to this show in other countries, I'm sure your governments also have credible sites chocked full with credible information. Use it, absorb it, and most of all, stay safe. Okay, boys and girls, it's that moment you've all been waiting for. It's time now for The Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for The Strange Things Adults Do. This Stuff File presents The Idiot of the Day.
A Brookside, Alabama police department dispatcher spotted something on a security camera and dispatched officers to investigate. A parked car appeared suspicious, and officers found a couple inside having sex in the department's public parking lot. Officers noticed a strong odor of marijuana, and a search of the car turned up crystal methamphetamine, marijuana, drug paraphernalia, and a gun. The occupants, Paula Garner and James Sanders, were arrested on multiple charges and were walked to the nearby jail. Said Chief Mike Jones, the officers did a bang-up job on this case. You know, that's probably what Garner had said about Saunders. I mean, why? Oh, why? Regardless of whether or not you're living in a world where there is social distancing, why? Even in the best of times, if you're having sex in a car that also contains crystal meth, marijuana, drug paraphernalia, and a gun, would you not be smart enough to be socially distant from the parking lot of a police department? One reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0555. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0555. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder, and don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on Apple or Google Podcasts, streaming on Spotify and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. A tape of the preceding program will be sent to the Radio Hall of Fame, where it will be placed under the statue of Marconi, which is kind of wobbly.